Peter Lynham.
And how are you going, Johnny?
Good, good. Just easing into the first day of lockdown.
Yes, precisely. Yes. Well, I feel there's a desperate need to divert the sense of fury that's overtaken Aucklanders and their attitudes towards whoever the 21-year-old mysterious figure may be.
Also, how many times can you say the first day of lockdown? Really?
Yes, precisely. Actually, it must be my calculation of the second day of lockdown, but there we are.
Sure, that's true.
Yes. So I thought it is interesting the way in which, most religious events are kind of sober, somber, kind of joyful, but not particularly fun. Mm. And the fact is that we've just gone through an important feast for Jews, which is total fun, total chaotic fun. And so I thought, well, it's pretty us goy, us Gentiles, couldn't enjoy a little bit of this good-natured drunkenness, actually.
Tell us about the festival and its nature. So, obviously, it's a huge celebration, but what does it stem from and what's its origin?
So it stems from the time when the Jews were sent into Babylon captive because they tried to be an independent kingdom against the kingdom of Babylonia, failed, and all their key leaders were sent off into Babylon. And eventually, the kingdom changes hands several times, but they're stuck there. And the story that's told, mind you, there's absolutely zero historical evidence for the events in the story. Mm. But this is the story that the way the Jews tell it.
Is that partly because it's so long ago, in a sense, that it's hard to have evidence, or is it just...
No, some aspects are very clear. The fact that the Jews went into captivity in Babylon is pretty well vouched for.
Right.
But it's just that these events, given that they're to do with a notable king about whom King Xerxes is plenty known, it is just, there's room for evidence, but none's appeared. So in this story, Esther is, or Ishtari, so this is a Persian name. So the name suggests there's something in the story, because why would a Jewish girl have a Persian name?
Mm.
But according to this story, the king is looking for a new queen after he's been insulted by his current queen.
Oh,
classic.
To come out.
Sounds legit so far. Carry on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, it's an interesting example, and it's for this reason been quite popular as a feminist model of behaviour of being outraged. So she refused to take part in the beauty contest that the drunken king wanted, and so the king decides that he'll, in a rather elaborate means, hold a beauty contest, and out of this, the most beautiful girl of all turns out to be Jewish, but conceals her identity. And because she's concealed it, is therefore in the inner rungs of the Persian nobility and the palace, when she hears through her uncle, Mordecai, interesting name, that's a good Jewish name, that there's a plot to kill the Jews.
This is, up until that last bit, it was very Disney.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Disney has probably made some use of this. So there's a plot, but the plot to kill the Jews is
kind of Game of Thrones
relevant.
Now.
It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Sorry, we shouldn't be.
So she conceives of a quite brilliant scheme whereby she brings the minister of the government responsible for this plot to kill the Jews, Haman is his name, and the king together. And she then denounces, considerable courage is involved in this, denounces the chief minister to the emperor in front of the chief minister. He then falls at his knees and tries to appeal to her for mercy. The king thinks he's trying to assault her, and so says, off with his head. Hang him, actually. And so then the feast, the Jews have a celebration. it's not a very nice celebration because they're given permission to kill anybody involved in the plot, which they do so with considerable glee. And are so successful that they get an extra day's extension to keep killing their enemies. Now, this isn't terribly religious, might say, but it leads to an annual feast in among Jews, which wasn't one of the ones laid down by Moses. Most of the Jewish feasts, the ones right from the very beginning. And in this feast, the story is read breathlessly at high pace from beginning to end of the Book of Esther with ever-increasing excitement. And as you go along, you hiss whenever the name of the enemy, Haman, is said.
Shun.
And you cheer every time Esther's name is said. And it grows more and more raucous. And the aim for Jews is to be incredibly infuriated in their synagogues as they hear the story. Hmm. So at the end...
Is there drinking? Is there drinking involved? You drink every time you hear Esther?
There's a good deal of drinking involved getting ready for this.
Sounds hectic,
And then it supposedly at the end, the din will be so loud that it will be impossible to tell whether they're cheering for Esther or hissing for Haman, because such is the festivity involved. And
wow, that's actually kind of deep.
It's a crazy festival, and anybody who's been near Jewish communities on the Feast of Purim, and Purim incidentally is the Persian name for the lot, because it all involved casting lots for the right date, firstly to hang the Jews, and secondly for the Jews to take revenge.
Mm.
So the story is in some ways outrageous, but I guess if you've been a minority people, you've got to celebrate with everything you're worth, and we can just be grateful that they simply hiss. They don't try and throw bricks at anybody.
Now, the modern ball is somewhat fancy dress. How has this come around?
Well, yes. I sent you a link to a story about in the USA that it's become the custom now to hold these fancy dress balls.
Is this New York-centric? Because that's kind of where they... Yeah.
Yes, but the odd thing is that I've never heard of these balls happening in New Zealand. So this is intriguing. This is a US variant on the story.
Mm.
And the analysis provided by the person who was writing about it would appear to be that this is a sort of cleaned up version of the story.
Yeah.
Where celebration is in order, but where's the wild hissing and shouting?
No, I think the adaptation, it seems from what I've read here, is more to do with the Jews wanting to... Well, it literally says wanting to be counted in Manhattan's upper crust, so that might count out the hoopering and the hollering and then bring in the sort of the heels and the ties, you know?
Because if we imagine the Jews through the long, bitter years of Christian domination in Europe and Muslim domination in the Near East, I mean, they've been a minority everywhere.
Mm.
And they've generally been mostly of the working class and so that, you know, and of the extreme poor. We forget that because we always remember the Rothschilds and the great families that are the elites of New York and London.
Mm.
But, of course, most Jews are not like this at all, especially the ones from the Middle East and from also a place which is big, Eastern Europe. Very, very large numbers of Jews in Eastern Europe, and that's why Hitler had such glee in the pogroms.
But to your point of them not doing it here. I mean, you'd argue that we don't really have the upper crust that Manhattan has, so maybe there's no interest in...
Well, is that actually the case?
There
are certainly, Hallenstein brothers, Natans.
They love a ball. They all love a ball, those people, don't they?
There's some very significant Jewish families in New Zealand, smaller number, but, you know, a significant part of the elite of New Zealand society for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but balls, I mean, balls, I guess, New Zealand was too small a society to have different cultures running balls for themselves, I guess.
So there's absolutely no sort of scent of one of these balls happening anywhere that you know of,
well,
Peter?
Stop trying to sniff out balls, John.
I think you should try and sniff them out, because I would love to know if there are.
Yeah, if there is a local celebration.
Because my understanding is almost all the celebrations in New Zealand take place in the synagogues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true, I think, in English society as well, largely in England, where you've got Jewish elites. But it's so interesting that in the USA, where, as you say, Jews, especially in New York, account for maybe 20% of the population.
It's a strong community, man. I remember getting lost in a Jewish community one time, and it was never ending. I was like, shit.
So you were walking through Brooklyn.
I was walking through Brooklyn. I was like, just walk. And then it was like, man, far out. They're lovely people, though. Everyone's nice to me, so whatever.
Yeah, I think the country is just such an interesting place to go. I mean, the equivalent for me was, years and years ago, I did a sabbatical part of the time. My house sat for somebody in the very strongly Jewish area of London, but not the elite Jewish area of London, but the East End part of the Jewish area of London. And that was like something else again. Now, I wasn't there for Purim, which would have been interesting, but I was there for the tabernacles, when they all build these huts in the backyards and live in huts over the weekend. And I was there for when on the Day of Atonement, They danced in the streets. This was pretty unusual.
It's hard for us to understand the sense of community that you have to forge being people outside of your land, isn't it? You know.
Precisely, and to maintain that, I mean, very very few communities have been successful at in New Zealand. Mm. If you take for a while, the Scandinavians in sort of the Inner Hawke's Bay and around Palmerston North were pretty strong communities.
Okay.
The Danish communities, but not even they faded out. Waipu, where you did get the Highland Scots, was a little bit of, but all of these communities get overwhelmed by the population at the end.
Perhaps we should dig deeper into certain communities that have come and what religions they've brought with them, perhaps. It might be interesting.
It's a topic that I think is really, really interesting, because maintaining that distinctiveness is one of the hardest things you can do. If you watch today, for example, Muslims adapting and being forced to adapt accommodate in New Zealand society. It's very interesting of how it affects their religious practice.
Right on. Peter, it's we're never short of good chat, mate. We'll catch you next Monday, no doubt.
Excellent. Look forward to it.